Association Great Graphic Novels for Teens Selection List Committee, the Margaret A. Edwards Award Committee, and is currently serving, are you currently serving on the Michael L. Prince Award Committee? She was a judge for the 2007 Eisner Awards, helped judge the Boston Globe Horn Book Awards in 2011, blogs for Good Comics for Kids at School Library Journal, and is the editor of the graphic novel review site, No Flying, No Tights. And her guide, Understanding Manga and Anime, was nominated for a 2008 Eisner Award. Next to her, we have Scott Robbins. He's a children's services specialist with Toronto Public Library, and he's the co-author of A Parent's Guide to the Best Kids Comics, which is for sale back there. He reviews graphic novels in Canadian Children's Book News, is a contributing blogger to School Library Journal's Good Comics for Kids blog, and has served on the jury for the Joe Shuster Awards in the Comics for Kids category. Max D'Anicio is currently Technical Services Librarian at the McIntosh Library at Upper Canada College in Toronto. He holds a PhD in Japanese Studies from the University of Pennsylvania, where he researched pre-World War II manga. And he has an MIST from the University of Toronto, where he also teaches a course on comic books and graphic novels in the library, as well as advanced classes on cataloging and knowledge management. And Max was my teacher when I was at the art school. I got a Master of Information there. And I'm currently the E-Reserves and Learning Zone Technician at the Ontario College of Art and Design. And I previously worked in the Library Services Department at the Beguiling, where I got involved in this. And I am currently the co-coordinator of this event. And I'm Lindsay. So,
that's a lot of credentials.
So, I guess to start, do you guys want to talk a little bit about your own collections and what's working in the way of comics and graphic novels? Right?
Goodness. I buy the comics for both the adult and the teen section in my library. We're a pretty large urban library. Brookline is the city right west of Boston. So it's a town officially, but it feels like a city. I do not buy the children's comics. That's up to the children's department, although we often obviously talk to each other about things. I'm trying to think of what in particular has been circulating more than others. It's like, but I'm not sure. I haven't done my stats yet this year. I'm about to do that when I get back. Certainly things like manga still remain popular, as they always have. We have a really booming manga and anime club in my community, so that doesn't surprise me. I think there have been more standalones that have been doing better as well, which is nice to see, because I think sometimes series are easier to find and kind of get more attention just because of the sheer volume they take up on the shelf. Whereas individual books are harder to pick out as something that are still circulating. And I will say one thing that's been interesting, I always find interesting about my adult collection, is that we have a huge interest in crime and noir comics, which is, I didn't know that would be true, but as soon as I realized that, I started buying all of the folks who do kind of crime comics that I had always liked, but didn't know that was going to be a particular interest. We also have a lot of interest in science.
Most of our graphic novels collections are purchased through the Beguiling. Toronto Public Library has a strong relationship with the Beguiling, and we treat our graphic novels as an ARP, and so they do a lot of the selection for us in terms of what's going to be purchased for our children's adult and teen collections. As I'm a selector for children's materials through the system, so I'm in charge of selecting materials for 17 branches in an area of the city. And because of my sort of expertise and knowledge about comics and graphic novels, I work a lot with the woman who's the head of our Children's Materials Selection Committee, who has a liaison with people from the Beguiling. So a lot of times we're always in sort of constant conversation about, you know, what's cool, what's coming up. Leslie will email me and say, "What's this series? I have no idea what this is." So I provide information. I'm kind of a point person when it comes to comics and graphic novels in the system, which is really fun and awesome. In terms of what's working, I can speak to sort of the children's collections because that's sort of my area of expertise. Things like Raina Telgemeier's Smile, My copy is just like falling apart because it's gone out so many times. Stuff like Kazu's Amulet series is really huge particularly at my branch. I just bought like a third set of Amulet, and they're never on the shelf. Starting to see an interest growing in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm assuming that's because kids are getting interested because there's a movie coming.
Yeah.
So I've been getting a lot of requests for that. Superhero titles for younger readers, as much as there's such a real hole in terms of, you know, this kind of material available for kids, we try to get as much as possible that Marvel publishes, and they're never on the shelf. In terms of adult collection, just sort of, you know, seeing stuff that's either being put on hold or seeing stuff that's coming back to the branch a lot. Obviously, Walking Dead, really huge because of the television show. That's about it. So, but graphic novels for Toronto Public Library are very successful. We, you know, our collections move very well, so we're really happy about that.
I work at a boys' school, and I'm responsible for collecting for grades 8 through 12, but also for faculty and staff. So I kind of run the gamut between young adult and adult. And it's kind of difficult since when I first came to the school, the collection was pretty much in shambles on a shelf. So trying to figure out what boys liked was a challenge. And the one thing we figured out was that they like series. We tend to have a lot of series on the shelf now. So series seems to work a lot for the children in particular. What they like to read, they tend to read a lot of Dragon Ball Z for some reason. They like that. I can't keep Full Metal Alchemist on the shelf. They like that. So a lot of manga definitely is circulated. But because the libraries, our libraries are kind of very much rooted in the curriculum of the school, we tend to also have a lot of circulation for adaptations of literature. So Shakespeare adaptations of Hemingway, things like that tend to circulate as well. And we also have programs through our learning centers for people who are learning English as a secondary language. So we tend to collect comics that have English that are levels of English that are not too difficult so that people can appreciate and learn the stories quite quickly. So we tend to collect in that area, and that seems to work as well. And for the adults, staff are always coming by. In fact, they're coming by saying, hey, can you get this in? And so we also have a working relationship with the guy. But one of the things that I like to do is do a lot of my selecting as well. It's one of the areas where we have a lot of fun selecting and choosing, but we always tend to send things over to the guy and say, hey, where are we missing? Where can we fill in our collection? So we enjoy having that relationship, actually.
So how do you keep up with what's happening in comics and what might be popular?
I certainly talk to my kids. That's the first thing I'm going to do, because they will tell me what they want. As much as possible, I track circulation. I do a lot of just paying attention to the various news sites in terms of what is being discussed. It doesn't mean I'm going to get absolutely everything, but for example, when Matt Fraction's Hawkeye started to kind of come up and everyone was like, this is amazing, and I read the first few issues and was like, yes, this is amazing. And I realized very quickly that it was going to be one of those series that we needed to get very, very soon, like get on the list so people could start reserving it. But I was one of the first librarians who knew about it because I pay attention to comics news and comics people discussing what is important or what's popular. And I actually had to send out an email to my entire network. We have 42 libraries, and I just said, everybody needs to buy a copy of this because it's already, you know, you can see the reserves coming up, but you guys aren't noticing it because you're not looking there, because they don't think about it. They tend to, librarians, at least in my graphic novel, kind of, in the adult collection, tend to notice things like reviews in library journals and award winners, and it's often much, much later than you'd ever hear about the really popular series. So actually, when I first arrived in Brookline, the adult collection was all Eisner Award winners, literary books, nothing popular. So when I first got there, I was like, and they were like, we were supposed to, you know, this is one, yeah, you're here, you can do the graphic novels now. But two, like, it doesn't seem to go out as much as we were told it would, and I kind of went, well, that's because you don't have the popular books. You know, like, you can't just get the really, you know, erudite award winners, which have their place. But, so I immediately got things like The Walking Dead, which is still our top circulator, Ex Machina at the time was a big one, and I just started to pack shelves with all the kind of adult series I knew would make the collection go out, and therefore bring people to all the other books that were in that same collection. So I do a lot of, I'm on Tumblr at my library. That's actually how I run the team part of our website. And I follow a lot of comics blogs that way, and just every morning check in on what's happening on Tumblr. And I also find a lot of webcomics people that way that also, you know, start to release books and you start to see who's coming up on the internet, which is a whole other thing. And that gives you another little bit of a predictory sort of category where I can anticipate that when that book comes out, someone's going to want it. I think Hyperbole and a Half is one of those books that you could see the wave coming of people being really excited about it, but it wasn't something that was popping up until quite late in the library world. So you have to kind of keep an eye on that.
Wow, you pretty much covered everything.
I'm sorry.
let's see. Sites or something?
What do I follow? I follow a lot of different ones. So, yeah.
Newsarama is more mainstream kind of like superhero stuff, but every once in a while they have some good articles on other things. What else? Comic Book Resources.
Yep. I follow a lot of people too. So, like, I mean, I have like the Comics Alliance is one I follow more for articles and discussion of comics rather than necessarily new books, but it still clues me into what people are talking about. The Comics Beat, you know, that's just a news site almost entirely, and that does definitely keep me up to date in like real comics news. I don't think necessarily all librarians need to follow that. It depends, but it is more that kind of statistics. ICB2 is all about what's selling, which also helps. I actually kind of ignore the New York Times graphic bestseller lists because they're not terribly useful to me in my job. Because they judge what is selling differently than I do, if that makes any sense. And usually I already have whatever they're looking at, so I'm like, that's not terribly helpful. I'm just trying to think of who often, like, people that I follow that clue me into things. I follow a number of animators and a number of people that have clued me into, like, new books that are coming out from people I might not realize are coming.
Other librarians? Librarians that have a real focus on graphic novels. Especially, like, on Twitter, you'll see people, you know, discussing, you know, things that they're excited about. Or, like, every once in a while I get something in the mail that's sent to me from a publisher, and as it, like, hey, have a look at this. This is upcoming, and I'll almost always talk about it on Twitter. Say, hey, look at this free book that Scholastic sent me. It's exciting. I get a lot of sort of suggestions that way. Also, too, if you're on Goodreads, you know, sometimes the reviews, you have to take them as a grain of salt. But if you start to see, because Goodreads, I believe, is used by a lot of librarians, and so if you start to see books that are upcoming that are being added by, like, various librarians, you know that there's kind of a specific buzz around a particular book. So I use Goodreads a lot. Publishers' websites. So you start, you know, once you start to learn about graphic novels, you learn who kind of the key players are in the industry. So people like First Second and Scholastic and, you know, a lot of the, obviously, Marvel and DC, IDW. And so, you know, every once in a while, I just pop on their websites and I kind of look and see what they have.
One thing I'm going to toot my own horn for a second. One thing we do every week is a feature on my website called Hot Off the Press, and it's just literally listing everything that comes out that week. And that's usually collected through Diamond, so it's kind of what's being distributed. But at the same time, what we do with that is that every week, Caitlin is the woman who kind of writes it up. She has all of our reviewers give feedback on what they're most looking forward to. So the post always starts with like six or seven titles that people are like, ooh, I really want to see that, or ooh, I'm really excited that's finally coming out, or whatever, to give you like a pointer from this giant list of, you know, these are the things to look for. And I admit, since I actually don't put those lists together, I go back and use them myself. And I'll go back and be like, I need to look a couple months back and see what I've missed. Because they're like, having that list is like a checklist to go down. And admittedly, I know enough to say, oh, we should have gotten that already. Or, you know, that's a book that I should get now because I know it's going to be popular here, and I had missed it in the kind of stream of things that were coming out.
When you say your site, you're talking
about... I'm sorry, no, Flying on Tights. Yeah, we that. We try to get it up every Monday. Sometimes it goes up on Tuesday. It depends on when I get it, and then I have to format it. but I think it's pretty... I will literally go back by, sometimes just by months, just to make sure I haven't missed something. And for me, it's a it's a digestible format for that. Because just scanning Diamond, that's too much for me to deal with.
Does everybody know who Diamond is?
Sorry, Diamond is a comics distributor, and they have a giant... They just put up their Diamond Previews, which is like a big phone book of a book that gives you everything that's coming out. And I don't even know what that period it covers.
It's a month.
Is it a month?
Yeah.
But it pre-advertises things, so you know what's coming.
It's where comic book stores generally buy all their comics. Is they get this monthly, like Robin said, phone book that has basically everything that's coming out. You know, I think it's like 3 months in advance.
Yep.
And then so comic stores put in their orders. And that's kind of the weird disconnect between, you know, comic stores and bookstores, because bookstores, you know, have sales reps and comic stores buy everything from Diamond. So.
And we kind of whittle it down to just the books, obviously. Like, that would be full of single-issue comics, which we don't generally buy, unless we have subscriptions for a few comics. But that's it.
Sounds like you've covered all the bases for me. But one thing that I do also is that I have actually a lot of friends in Japan that basically troll Akihabara and will often send me emails. So I have like my little minions who go around looking at new publications, actually bookstores as well, telling me what's hopefully going to be translated on the fan site soon. See what's coming up as well. Just to be on the lookout for that. Because we tend to sort of, our students tend to want to have a lot of the Japanese comics coming in. They tend, for some reason, we have a few who are interested in Marvel and DC, so I tend not to actually get them in, even though I buy a lot of them. They tend not to need it for some reason. And I can't explain why.
I have, in my collection, it's adults who read Marvel and DC. It's not so much, there are some teens, there are a couple of them. And I think of them as these usually guys, but not always. And then the rest of them read much more broadly. And those guys will too, but it's like they're the ones who actually come up and say, you know, do you have the new blah? And I'll be like, yes, it's coming. But mostly the people I actually see reading superhero comics are adults, and we have a lot of them in the adult collection for that reason.
I feel like at times I still have to fight kind of a bias against why do we have this collection to begin with, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems that it's at times very difficult to have to back up against the wall to rationalize why it's necessary to have this in a collection to begin with. So you always feel like you have to start out with, well, look at all these places where the reviews are here, so you can check Quill Inquirer, you can check, you know, book lists of all these wonderful reviews, and where the review appear, all the things that, yes, they appear in the New York Times book reviews, so it has that sort of literary quality to it, and you can rationalize it, but yes, there is so much more. But to actually get to the level where so much more to collect and to offer, right? That's a whole different argument than actually.
Well, I thought it was interesting, like you said, that you have adaptations that go out, whereas in my library they sit on the shelf. Unless they're particularly good. There are definitely some that are like, to me, the literary adaptations that are clearly coming from someone's heart, like it's someone who the artist themselves is like, I wanted to adapt this book.
Right.
Like the Babysitter's Club. But like that had a real synergy of how that worked. Or A Wrinkle in Time. Those were projects that were really determined to be what they were, and they were lovely. But the other ones, the ones that are more kind of less set and more just like, let's make this a comic, you know, then you're like, and those ones don't work. Those ones are ones that just, and like teachers like them, and parents like them, and I'll just be like, yeah, no.
although I saw someone take out the Miss Peregrine's.
Yeah, but that's a little arty visual. I don't know if that works better somehow. Anyway.
Well, I wanted to mention one other thing in terms of like learning about what's coming out or what's hot or what's is going to shows like this, TCAF, which is wonderful because it's free. Unfortunately, most comic book conventions are you have to pay for. But there's, you know, there's a number in Toronto now. Fan Expo's in August, and Toronto Comic Con is in. When's Toronto Comic Con?
Which one? There's one that came out just recently.
April.
I think so, yeah.
So there's tons of shows that you can go to. Also, too, if you have an opportunity to go to library shows, libraries have been sort of on board with comics and graphic novels since early 2000s, because they saw their circulation shoot up like crazy. So, you know, Ontario Library Association Conference at the end of January will have all of the sort of Canadian publishers, and a lot of the Canadian publishers are now doing graphic novels, especially kids stuff, like Kids Can and Tundra and Atlas Classic Canada and things like that. So if you have an opportunity to go to library shows, that's always a good thing too. And ALA has tons of programming in terms of comics and graphic novels. So.
And I would say one of the things that's in my area, Anime Boston, is the big Anime and Manga convention that happens, and it's all over New England. People come in, and they plan for it all year, and all my kids go. But the funny part is it happens right next to a giant mall. So all of the costume folks go to the mall for lunch and just hang out at the mall for like the entire night. So it's this great combination of extraordinarily wealthy shoppers and all the manga and anime folks. But what I can do is I don't actually have to go to the convention. I can just go to the mall and watch all the cosplayers and figure out what the hot series are. Because who's wearing what? You know, when you ask the kids, they'll be like, all right, so what's the big one? Is it Natalia this year? Or is it, you know, Full Metal Alchemist? Because like, I remember when I first went, I was like, man, Full Metal Alchemist is everywhere. And then a couple years ago, it was Natalia. And it just, like, you start to see what are the kids finding that they are dressing as. And that will really give you the, like, heads up. Okay, that's the thing I need to get next. Attack on Titan. So that just gives you the warning again. And it's fun, because you get to admire all these amazing costumes.
Cool. So how do you decide, like, how do you organize your collections, and how do you decide where to put graphic novels?
In terms of, like, the physical shelving?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm fairly strongly opinioned about this. I think graphic novels should be treated like the format that they are, so they should have their own shelf and or space. In our library, we have a children's graphic novel section, a teen graphic novel section, and an adult graphic novel section. We do subdivide them so that comic strips and comics collections are their own thing. They're called, you know, they're comic, and then graphic is graphic. And then we have nonfiction is graphic plus the Dewey number, so whatever it's about will be, and that's usually at the beginning of the section. Then there's everything else. We organize almost all of the collection by title, because that's how people look for them. Because obviously when you start going by last name, that gets complicated when different people write different parts of the series. That's especially true of superhero comics. But we also do things like Spider-Man is Spider-Man Ultimate, Spider-Man Amazing, Spider-Man Peter Parker. So all Spider-Man is together, but you differentiate between the different running series. And, you know, that can get complicated. It also gets particularly annoying when people stop using volume numbers or start using volume numbers when they did it before. Manga is much easier in some ways because it's all pretty much the same size. And we actually do have an oversized and then a regular size because I found if you tried to shelve them all together on the shelf, they would eventually fall over because there were too many different sizes all next to each other and they all kind of go. We actually have all the short and squat books together and all the tall skinny books together. And it's not actually by genre or country or anything like that. It's just the size of the book. And I think for the kids section, they are still smaller, although it gets bigger and bigger all the time. And I think they mainly go by title at this point. The adult collection is weird right now, and I'm actually about to fix that. Because they will do it by title if it's a series, but otherwise it's by author, and that gets really confusing. I find it that doesn't work very well. I'm hoping this summer to take a chunk of time to fix that. So relabel that and make it my title.
Do your cataloging people consult with you in terms of how to label things?
They will, yeah. I'm lucky in that they give me the ability to change what they do. They don't care. They basically, they think I know better than they in terms of just how to shelve it. Mm-hmm. Like cataloging is different, but the actual classification, as they say, they don't mind that I tell them what to do in that respect. That's not true of all catalogers. I've met other catalogers who are more cranky.
Max is a cataloger, but
yeah,
you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, so I'm a sort of technical services department of one, so everything from shelving to printing to working with Mark Records. This is actually our collection over here, in its entire glory from A to Z right here. And we do pretty much everything either by, it's both title and author. And like, manga is very easy. It was once housed on those other far shelves over there, all the way in the back. And we found the solution was easily rectified first just by getting modular shelving. stuff that moves, since we find that boys are very kinetic learners, being able to put stuff on shelves that move and bring things out tends to actually increase circulation. So I have a bunch of slides in here that actually show increased search stats after we've done two things. Once we've been and new shelving, and then we also changed our library system. And I don't know, for those of you who don't work in school library software, particularly for your OPAC stuff, is really poor. It's not very good. There's the choice of vendors. There's so many different choices out there. Which one do you go with? They all have some really good functionalities with them. Some of them really don't. I mean, it's just not really all that good. So it's a bit of a crapshoot. You go with now something called TLC, and it's really good because it's visual. And so I have to take a stab both from the back end. So I do a lot of MARC record editing. And so fortunately, I have the patience and the time to actually go one by one with each record so that I at least make things uniform in the catalog. And through conversation with boys when they're asking for something, I at least get some idea of how they want to search for it so that I can at least make it so that when they look in the catalog for something, they'll know how to find it. Classification of something I find to be not too much of a relevant piece because that's just how you put the book on the shelf. For me, that's not too big of an issue. But actually how you go searching for something or looking for something in a catalog, what name do you use, what series do you use, that's more important. So controlling for series seems to be the big issue more than anything that I find in my context. We separated out by graphic book fiction and nonfiction. And we have Dewey and we have non-Dewey. But before, it was all kind of mixed and mashed together because my predecessor decided that they all had panels and they're all kind of colorful and they should all kind of just live on a shelf together. I mean, part of them were even classified, so it really was a bit of a job trying to actually get them all uniform, labeled. So even that took its own time.
You were talking about manga. It can be somewhat daunting to collect manga because some series are so long running and so many series. So how do you manage?
I still have a number that I've clung to because they're still popular. We still have, for example, a number of Tokyo Pop titles on our shelf, even though the company's long gone. Well, it's kind of still there, but not really. So all of those books I know I can't replace, and eventually, once you hit the point where you can't follow the story anymore, then I just read the whole thing. When I read manga, I tend to read the whole series. I don't read just one. If it's possible to replace it, I do a lot of replacing of volumes. And I'm lucky in that I have a significant enough budget that I can just go ahead and buy the full series. So even if I'm starting a series late and say I need to get 10 volumes, I just do it. Because for me, as a manga reader, I know how much, it doesn't make any sense if you don't have, it's like, you know, having only the prologue of a book on the shelf if you only have the first volume. It's not even like a first chunk of story, it's like the first two pages. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So most manga is built to run on the long form, and you can't not have all the volumes, or else it doesn't really work. And I have noticed in circulation, the more volumes you have, the more they all circulate. If you end up cutting it off, they stop circulating, because there's no point to continue. You can't get the full story. People will, of course, request it from other libraries, but there are a lot of kids who don't really do that. They don't really understand to request volumes. And the hardcore ones will, but mostly I try to collect as much as possible, but that doesn't mean I have to be selective about which ones I keep and which ones I choose to collect. We have a standing order program, and all of the manga and most of the superhero titles that I typically collect, I get through standing order, so they are automatically ordered for my library. And I don't have to think about it. I don't have to remember when they're coming out in order to make sure we get the next volume. I go through that maybe once every 6 months, and just make sure, especially with manga, you'd be like, oh, that series is over. That's been over for a few months. I need to stop that one and put a new one in. But it all depends. But yeah, I guess I just firmly believe that if you're going to get manga and if your kids want to read it, you need to commit to the full series. And you just need to know that. You can. What I usually advise people to do if they're starting a collection is to start with the newer titles. You know, start with the newer popular stuff that only has a couple volumes out, and then get it as it comes out. And then it's not a huge chunk of money to spend it once, but you know that you'll be getting a series that people can follow.
We're pretty lucky that we're such a huge system that generally, you know, when I'm doing, you know, collection development for the children's, I try to keep a series, you know, together at, you know, if I started at one branch, I will continue that series at that one branch. But obviously, you know, books get lost, books, you know, fall apart, it gets discarded, and we're lucky to be such a huge system, 100 libraries this year, so, that essentially people can get other volumes that may be missing from particular collections from other branches. We have a really good sort of hold system, so we can get, you know, books from basically anywhere in the city. You know, if stuff starts to sort of fall apart, then yeah, I would agree with Robin that we would likely need the whole series, but only if it was like to the point where there was absolutely no way you could get other volumes from other libraries.
So in the context, and I think also for a lot of the school district libraries, series is a bit of a daunting thing because of budgetary constraints. And especially for a lot of series that are popular, and there are a lot of historical series that are very popular, to get in major series and business and investment in money, right? And so, for example, in my context, I don't have a lot of money to spend on our graphic novel collection. It has been historically and still is a bit of a side project. Our major focus in collection development is in fact for history, because we're an international baccalaureate school. We have to support the program for finishing the IB diploma. So I have a small dedicated budget. So when it comes to series and maintaining series, if we lose things, yes, I'll replace it. But in the long haul, if I get a series in, it's the premise that yes, we have them available to you, and if you want to continue them, then please, that's when we'll introduce you to TPL, and we also feel that it's your responsibility as a part of the citizen of the city to actually get familiar with TPL, learn how to use the TPL branches, because we can't provide for you every single volume and every single book, but we can show you where you can go, and we think that that's part of being a responsible library user.
And in terms of collections at TPL, we have, if you want a book, all you have to do is request it, and it goes into sort of a process for request for purchase. And generally, for the most part, if we're able to get it, and if a customer or a patron asks for a specific book, we'll get it for them. So, you know, we're a really good sort of reactive kind of system in that way, that if someone wants something, and that we'll get it.
And we've gotten a few things that I think that people were surprised we bought. For example, we bought all the Absolute Sandman, the giant hardcovers, when it first came out, because we had a number of requests, and I looked at them and went, you know what, this series is always and will always be popular, and these are the new editions with the new coloring. You kind of have to get them. And I, you know, thankfully I'm given completely free rein in my collection, so I just was like, fine, I'm just going to buy them. And they have gone out like crazy. And I always think they're strange that they go out because they're so big that I read on the train, so I'm like, what the heck is going to be like? But people do, and they love them, and they have gorgeous books, and they've lasted a long time. That's not always true of hardcovers like that, but those particular ones have actually lasted. It's like, yay, they buy them.
DC's listening.
Yes, probably not anymore though. But yeah, and I think the other thing I look for is omnibus editions, of course. If I can do the Viz big editions, for example, as much as they actually do tend to fall apart faster, it still saves me some shelf space, because I do have so much demand and I do have limited physical space that I have to figure that out. I'm very good at arguing in my library for more shelf space. Like I'll hit the limit and then be like, so. We need to like maneuver a little bit, and we're about to shift, I think, the adult collection so that I can get a little more space. Because they go out like crazy, and the heart starts beating. When everything goes out, how do you decide what to do? And that's a whole other ballwax. I don't know if we want to talk about that.
Well, the one thing I was going to ask before that is you were talking about suggesting to people if they're starting manga that they should start a new series. Is it ever too late to get into a series? Like, you don't have Naruto. Should you start at the beginning, or is it like too late now? So far.
It might be. I mean, Naruto still goes out in my library, but it's not huge. And there's also the sad fact that, of course, many of my teens read it online. So it depends on how much you want to invest in that many volumes. Those, of course, you can get a few at least that are under this, so you get the first chunk. And then see how it goes out in your library. Right. If it does go out like hotcakes, maybe you do need to invest in the whole thing. I think for me it just depends on also trying to anticipate how long the series are. Like, we just actually put out a list that was the must-have manga for teens at Midline and Tights, and we updated it, and we specifically included in the listings how long the series is and how long it's expected to go. So if it's complete in Japan, this is how many volumes you'd ultimately have to get, even if they're not all published here yet. Or if it's ongoing, then you'll know that it's still going. And it may be 58 volumes, but there are still more coming, so you may want to think about that before you collect it. But then you can also say there was a short series, like Pluto, by Naoki Urasawa. 8 volumes, all in one set. We just put that on Outstanding Books for the College Bound for Science and Technology. And that's one I would love to see more people get, because it's a wonderful, wonderful series. And it's only 8 volumes, so you can just be like, that's it, just get it. That's what I try to also tell people, is look for the ones that you know are shorter. That you have to readjust your thinking to think that, like, 8 to 10 volumes is actually a really short manga series. So that's normal. That's a one you can get.
I think also, too, with really popular series like Naruto and One Piece and things like that, where, a lot of manga is sort of, like, it kind of reflects sort of the sitcom structure, where there's not really, like, the sort of base core concept of the book doesn't change. It's just sort of like, and it always kind of, by the end of the story, it's like, oh, and everything's, back to the beginning again. So, ordering, the latest, 5 or 6 for stuff like Naruto, just to sort of test it out, I think would be okay as well.
And you could talk to manga readers and say, like, is there a story arc that it starts at that I could get, like, volume 53 to 62, and that'll, like, at least give people a sense of.
Yeah.
Because some of them work like that. Some of them don't, but some of them do.
And making those decisions, you'd have to know where to go. So you'd have to sort of either do your research or read it.
What is it not? There's like a gap in time, but you'd have to know that.
But that's a way to avoid, having to purchase, 80 volumes of something, in the first go, is that, just have a little chunk. If it's popular, then you can, start to go back a little bit more and purchase more.
And I definitely miscalculated. I mean, I definitely got the series and then been like, wow, this is sitting on the shelf. And then as I try to figure out, and then eventually, weed.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, that was a plus.
And we've at times, we've purchased 2 or 3 volumes of a series just to try it out to see how that's worked. And if it hasn't, it's actually not a big loss for us either.
Right.
Read those out and start again. And the best thing about it is that she trying to find new things, because there's always different series to choose from.
Yeah, don't be afraid to weed stuff.
Yeah.
If it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I always say that.
How do you weed?
I just like, every book needs to, it has to earn its space on the shelf. And in the libraries, it earns its space on the shelf by going out. Mm-hmm. So I really strongly, believe that circulation is really super important. And if something isn't going out, try to see if it'll go out at a different branch. And if it doesn't go out there, then it should come out.
So Robin was saying, get rid of the whole series, not just bits and pieces of it.
At least for manga,
yeah.
And I mean, like, superheroes, it depends. Again, they have story arcs, so you can keep one story arc and get rid of a chunk of others. There are certain things that are consistently popular among the series that we have. So, like, Young Avengers, it's always been a really strange publishing schedule anyway. those still go out, and I still try to replace those if I can. Of course, it's hard to have anything in print from the big Marvel and DC, not put up by GoComi, which is long gone, but it was one of my favorites, and I have discovered over the years it's actually built up this little audience of people in my library who, like, we were, like, the only library that has it, so it goes out because we are the only ones that have it, but when those die, I'm going to have to just pull it off the shelf, and I will be very sad. But I think I agree. I mean, like, I read pretty ruthlessly because I have to. I don't have enough physical space to just let things sit there. One of the series that I bought that I thought would be really popular was Ranma 1/2, and it doesn't go out. And, you know, I think it's just old enough that it doesn't quite go out anymore like it did. I keep waiting to see if people will find it. Some of my kids find it a little bit, but eventually I'm just going to have to be like, okay, either move it to adult, and adults might be more nostalgic for that series because they remember it, but I got to figure out something because it's not really going.
Try everything. If something isn't working, put it on display. You know, move it to a different section. See if it'll move. And you know, once you've exhausted all sort of attempts at trying to get it to move, and it's still not going out, you just have to kind of break out a box of Kleenex and say goodbye.
Oh, and one thing I will say that I do is when I run my statistics, I get the full graphic collection. I have a really pretty adaptable statistics thing, so I can run my lists however I want. And what I've done over the years is I divide out. So I look at the series together, and I look at the standalones together. I don't compare them to each other. Because standalones are never going to go out as much as series do. And you have to judge them separately, because they will all be weighted if you look at just... And that's not fair to them, because they can't. They just kind of can't compete at that level. But what it also does is I sometimes, when I have a lot of spare time, I will take the series and kind of smush them together and see what the circulation by volume is for each series, to see how that changed the impression of how popular they actually are. So if it has 14 volumes, like, out of all the circulations, I've divided between those 14 volumes and see how many times it goes out. Because then I can really judge the series by this as a series rather than as an individual volume.
You like the numbers, don't you?
I do. As I said, I do it like once a year because it is a huge project to make it do that. But I like to do it because it really does show me which series are the ones I should continue and which ones are the ones I should perhaps let, like, wane a little bit. And I do. I want to judge the standalones independently because they are just often they just have a harder time finding their audience, and that's when I go, okay, I need to do a display, or I need to put out a book list, or do something to show off these titles so people find them.
We do something. We recently adopted a piece of software called LibGuides, which is really powerful in that it allows you to do digital curation of materials, and it's really simple to actually take books from your catalog, put them in boxes in a way that makes sense for your users, and push that content out via URLs. And we found that it actually affected circulation in a way that some of the volumes that have not circulated are finding new life. And we're going to continue exploring that in a way. And hopefully we'll get some more circulation in our collection. For us, this is the only space that I have. So, if I'm going to put new stuff on, I have to actually take stuff off, because I have no other place to put it. That's the sort of prerogative that I have. It's like the new clothes in the closet.
Is your collection here, is that all ages? Like teen children and adult?
Except for K to 7, that's in the 7th school.
Okay.
And their collection is much bigger than ours, because it's not a priority. I've made it a priority as much as I can.
Right. Which is surprising, because generally they say children's collections are much smaller than, or at least in the past, are much smaller than adult or teen collections, because that's kind of where, like, teens are kind of the sweet spot where it's like, oh my god, circulation is, all these teens are taking a manga, it's crazy. So that's interesting to hear that your K to 7 collection is the largest.
It is the largest compared to 12, but I think it's also a reflection of the academic program. The requirements of it are so restrictive, and some of it is not even by the Ministry of Education, that even trying to get them to read outside of class by the time they're in grade 9, it's a challenge. So the fact that they got a book in their hand to begin with, graphic novel or not, I'm already happy.
So, I mean, you both have pretty big collections that you're working with, and your collection is very focused on boys, because it's boys' school. So maybe speaking about pigeonholing collections. Maybe you could think about other collections you've seen as well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really fit into yours. But, like, is it possible, or, I mean, it's surely possible to pigeonhole your collection too much. So how do you avoid making it too much for, like, readers or too much for a certain age or gender?
I find I try very hard to, I try to take into account my own biases as much as I can. For example, I am famously, I have a prejudice against, and this goes for all media, anything that's kind of literary middle-aged ennui, like, I find really tiresome. So I'm not going to pick up that book if it's about, like, someone's sad day in their 40s. Which sounds like really horrible, but I don't like that in books, I don't like it in movies, I don't like it in comics. So I have to remember that and go, like, okay, there's this memoir that just came out that everyone's been talking about, I need to buy it, like, despite whatever I think about it. And there's just that awareness of knowing which kinds of things are the things you're going to gravitate to as a person because you think they're cool, and make sure your collection is balanced that way. I have certain things that we've started to be known for in my library, so we are known for having, for example, a lot of manga in our adult collection, which a lot of our libraries don't. They only have it in their teen collection because that's where they can prove that it circulates, whereas I certainly know there's a huge audience for manga in the adult collection, and also content-wise, they should just be in the adult collection because that's who they're aimed at. And I don't just mean, you know, sexual content or violence, I mean the sophistication of the story. So I've now realized that within my network we're known for that, so I will collect more manga that might not be collected elsewhere, because I'm like, okay, I know someone's going to want it, and they'll know that we will get it, so I have to be aware of that too. But in terms of, I think, I don't know, I don't think too hard by gender. I think most of the time, I personally look for women, of course, creating, because they're often a minority voice. Any minority voice, to be honest. I like to bring them in, and I try to keep an eye on people that are requesting otherwise of all of our collections. As I said, like, science is a big interest in my area. We have a lot of, for example, I'm not sure why, but we just have an academic community, and a lot of people interested in astronomy and physics and chemistry, and so I look for the comics that actually relate to that. So, like, Feynman was a really big hit in my library because it's fun. And that, you know, that worked out, that I could know that would hit an audience. So some of it, I guess, is just being aware of your local audience and knowing what they'll look for.
Again, we're very lucky that we have Blue Darling as a partner in terms of our collection development for graphic novels, and they know their stuff, so they are really good at selecting a pretty, you know, wide and deep selection of titles in different branches. And again, we're very lucky, again, to have 100 libraries, so we have, you know, a huge collection of graphic novels. And generally, the smaller branches, the neighborhood branches, will have more kind of, like, popular works, more works that are, you know, less literary. But the district branches, which are the larger branches, they will have sort of a more of a wide variety in their collections. We always try to make sure that we have a good representation of Canadian content, because obviously we're Canadian librarians. So, you know, we strive to support local authors and illustrators. So, stuff that's, you know, may not be published by a big publisher, but is a Canadian and has some kind of, you know, media buzz. I'm thinking of stuff like Kank, which came out a few years ago, which was a graphic novel about, I forget his name. He was a bike. It was basically a bike thief in Toronto, and so we've got a number of those in our collection.
What's that?
Yes, yeah. It was a graphic novel about him. Something like Mirror Mind by Tori Wolcott, which is about a girl dealing with dyslexia. That's in our collections, and that's kind of, you know, small press, self-published. We're really lucky to have Beguiling as sort of a guide for us, and of course, you know, the people in the library who are, you know, have that sort of graphic novel expertise are consulted. So. Yeah.
The same with us is that we try and also get as much of an experience into the collection as it's also reflected in curriculum. One thing that we're also aware of is that we try, in terms of graphic novels, we also think of it that there's a lot of it is fiction. And we don't talk a lot about graphic nonfiction. And so a lot of those introduction to series, introduction to philosophy, introduction to Nietzsche, things like that, we want to try and get into the collection as well, because those books that sort of pictographically, visually introduce students to very complex topics, we find don't get talked a lot about in conventions and things like that. And you find that they're actually very good resources for students who are trying to learn very complicated things. And we find that that can be something that we want to build on even more. So when people are asking, what do you have new in your collection, they're automatically assuming that it's something in fiction, or at least autobiographical. But if I say to them, hey, we have a new book on Immanuel Kant, is that something that's appealing to you? It sometimes takes people by surprise, but actually it's actually a really good series. So that's something that we're working on too, is actually introducing more graphic nonfiction into the collection as well.
And I will say one thing I think about a lot, and this is in general with what I think of as reader's advisory or how I'm dealing with the public. I try very hard to not presume that I know what people want, and it's very hard to do that sometimes. You think you know your audience, and you think, oh, of course, that will make these people happy. And I think of it in terms of things like gender. Like, I wonder about this in a boys' school. You know, do you presume too much what boys will want to read? And I always remember there was one manga meeting we had with my manga club, and there was a guy there who just read all, like, girly shoujo comics, and he just loved them. And he had no problem with that. No one made fun of him. It was all fine. But it's just, I hadn't thought he would like them. I was like, huh, okay, I should remember that. So it's that kind of thing of remembering that your own ideas of what your audience is may not actually match what people are reading. So I try to just pay attention as much as possible and try not to bring my own ideas, I guess, into the conversation until I get feedback, until I say, oh, okay, that's what you're looking for. And the same with, like, representation in terms of all kinds of diversity. You know, you want books that represent everybody in your community, but don't presume that that's going to be an issue unless the person brings it up, if that makes sense. So it's something I have to think about a lot when I'm having that conversation.
It's an art, not a science.
It is, you know? Yeah.
And sometimes you fail, you deserve to get your art piece. But that's just part of learning, so.
There's one layer, which I'm wondering, you have RFID.
Yes.
We both have RFID. So we don't, and we're thinking of getting it in. It's something I've been pushing for. Because of the privacy issue, one thing, is that you find that privacy circulation. One of the comics that circulates quite frequently is Alison Bechdel's Fun Home, actually in our school. We can talk about expectations.
Fun Home by Alison Bechdel.
So Fun Home is one of the more popular standalones that circulates from this collection. And I would like to have more comics that represent the LGBTQ community in our collection. We have a sizable LGBTQ collection in our own library, but it never gets taken out. But the books are all over the place, right? So we know that they're used, but they don't get taken out because in order for them to be taken out, you have to write your name on the cards. So we have an issue with privacy, and in a boys' school, where issues of masculinity and all that kind of thing come up on a daily basis. Boy, that's actually one of the things that's, in my mind, at work every single day, problematic. Like, what's it mean to be a boy working with other boys? How do you actually navigate that? If someone wants to take out a book on that, you see your name there, bullying, all that kind of stuff comes up. So there's another layer of our system in itself can actually prevent people from getting access to material that actually is really important to them. Even if that material has been purchased and is waiting for you in the library, you can't take it out, or you don't feel like you can take it out safely. So that's something I'm trying to address too. But then again, you know, to convert a library, even a small one like ours, it's still a lot of cash, and we don't have a lot.
I had a branch librarian that I actually always really admired, that she had a collection. It was only about 10 books, and they were sex and body books, that kind of book for teenagers, and they had no library markings on them, and they were not cataloged, and they were just on our system. And the kids would just take them and return them, and it worked. They would bring them back, but it meant that they didn't have to check it out with somebody. And I've often thought that we should do that in my library, something like that, just to give it so that even with RFID, and even with that, if somebody has a record somewhere that you took that out. And we have that same thing, of course, books get read all over the library. And one of the things we have is we have a fairly substantial Yaoi collection in my adult collection because we've had glass for it and it's proved to be popular, so I came with
it.
Sorry, Yaoi is male-male romance in manga, and they are very much romances. They can be more explicit, less explicit, but it's always male-male, yuris, female-female. And it's something that people look for, and I had one of the first requests for the series I got from a 16-year-old boy for a particular series that I knew in my head was actually fairly explicit by the end. And I kind of went, So I went to my collection development librarian, the head of reference, and just said, so I've had this request, I'm happy to buy it, I just, what do you think should be, is there anything we should do? And she's like, nope, just put it in the adult collection, that's fine. And I was like, good. So we were good. And it's the kind of thing that, I have that freedom in a public library, I have an adult collection I can put it in. Thankfully, we've had one challenge to our graphic novels over the years, and I found out after I had gone through the process of defending this particular book, just writing it all up and sending it to my director, he emailed me back and was like, oh, it's that guy. That guy challenges something every year. And I was like, no, okay. So I felt like, okay, that has at least not happened. But I live in Massachusetts, which is, the land of the blue in a lot of ways, so I'm lucky that I don't have as much, but I've been in libraries where major challenges in my library before. So yeah, I certainly think about it, but I have that sense of like we have a little bit of a niche there that I have to think through, and I do get worried that someone will flip out eventually. But I'm prepared. So that's all I can do.
So we have about 10 minutes left. Does anyone have questions? Oh, that's my thing.
Because a lot of comics are in color. Like with the black and white ones, you can read them them on like a Kobo or something like that. But I think that with color stuff, just because the device technology may not be there yet, the actual delivery may not be there yet, I think we've still got a couple of years before. Like, I mean, how long did it take us to get sort of OverDrive into, you know, a working, usable, you know, user-friendly kind of, you know, system? It took, you know, a good, like, 4, 5, 6 years. So I think that eventually we'll get there. And I think it's the same thing with books, whereas ebooks are now seen more as just another option. It's like you can read the physical book or you can read the electronic book. And I think that there are people that will kind of do both, and there are some people that will just do electronic, and there are some people that will just do print. And that's just kind of the reality of the situation, is that I think for a while there we were really worried that the ebooks were going to take over books, and I think that we're kind of at the point where everybody's like, no, this is just another option. So,
and I would agree. It seems to be that the information will reside where it will reside, and that people will access it in their preferred format, whatever way they want to.
Lunch is lined up already. People are already lined up for lunch. You're welcome to ask another question, but we should probably wrap it up. No, we're good.
Okay. We got one back there.
Yeah. Last sure. Go ahead.
Yes.
You mentioned it. That the kids could go online and order, ask for the TBL to purchase.
Uh-huh.
Is that on your website?
It's not online, no. You actually have to come into a branch, okay. And there's a particular form you have to fill out, and it's filled out with the librarian, and
so they should go to their home branch?
They should, any branch in the system, you know, is it available to take?
Do you
open
that?
No.
Is that a conscious choice?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I was going to say, because we have it online. I get it
really
online.
What's that?
It's in the
Oh, okay.
Just curious.
It's in the works. That's my boss over there.
You take our time to get there.
Yeah. I also buy all the DVDs, so I get a million DVD requests like per day, it feels like, and comics as well. I constantly get a barrage. And we always tell people to go online to request it. So.
Yeah, we call them the blue forms because they're blue. Like, you know, we would say, oh, I need more blue forms, or oh, here's a blue form request.
No, never. You know, the point is it's different, not that it's a replacement. So I think, and that's true of manga, that's true of anything that you read.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank Robin, Scott, and Max for being with us today. Thank you guys for coming. If you have a lunch ticket, lunch is out here. There's a volunteer who will be checking for your tickets. If you don't have a lunch ticket, come on back at 2 for the next round of programming.